Let's take a look at real estate and REITs. Don't you just love that word? REIT stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. I like to say about real estate that real estate is tricky. Can be very profitable, but it's tricky. And what does that mean? What's the real translation? It's a real pain in the... Yeah, right. And folks, I have a renewed appreciation for mutual funds and stocks and bonds after dealing with real estate. This is going to be just a short presentation because, as we'll see in our presentation, real estate is a whole course unto itself, and we teach those courses. But this is a course about investments, introduction to investments, and we should spend a little bit of time, if only to whet your appetite for learning more. Slide number two. There are two types of real estate investments, direct and indirect. On slide number two, we take a look at some of the direct real estate investments. And what does it mean to have a direct real estate investment? Well, your name is on the title. You go down to the county courthouse, the admin building, whatever your jurisdiction has, city, whatever, if the city handles it, and you look on the property information, and you'll see your name there because it's public record, folks. You can't hide who, well, some people try with trusts and other holding corporations and the like, but no, it's public record. You have to be able to find out who is owning the property. Your home. Many people will buy a home, and when especially if they're stock investors, just say, well, don't you want some real estate? Well, I have some real estate. I own a home. So there, see, I'm hedged. I'm balanced. I have some stocks. I have some real estate investments. Some people might want a vacation home for an investment, and that can get a little tricky about whether the IRS thinks it's a rental property or a vacation home. And rental property, as we said, is a whole course unto itself, folks. It really is. And we teach those courses, as I said. So here, I might see you in, well, I don't teach them, but we might see you in a real estate course at Southwestern. Now, probably the most gains in real estate in the short term come from undeveloped land. But this type of real estate investment poses enormous risks. There is no cash flow from your undeveloped land, unless somebody's renting it to pitch a tent on. You still have to pay the property taxes, and there's often no guarantee you're going to be able to develop the land, depending on the economics of the situation or the zoning, the politics of the situation. So I recommend that you do not get involved in buying dirt, as they say. Don't invest in dirt unless you've been in the industry for quite some time and know exactly what you're doing, because that can it can be just a disaster. You read or you look in the listings, and there's all these properties that are being sold because the person just gave up and stopped paying their property taxes. And then somebody says, oh, wow, I can get 5 acres for just paying the tax. And then a few years later, they give up and they stop paying the taxes. So, this is for the seasoned in real estate investor. Slide number three. Now, what about indirect real estate investments? These are great if you do not want to be a landlord, right? This is the kind of situation where you're removed, typically, from the day-to-day operations. And probably the most well-known is the Real Estate Investment Trust, REIT. I just like saying REIT. Reedy all righty. And what are these things? Well, they're not really corporations. They're not stocks. They look like stocks to you and me as individual investors. And they trade like stocks. And they don't pay dividends. They pay, I think it's called fees from operations, just FFAs, FFOs. But they look like dividends. And when Walmart or Target or JCPenney's, when they open up shop in a mall or somewhere in a strip mall, they don't actually own the property. Sometimes they do, but most of the time they're entering into 50-year leases to be there and to rent the property. And who takes care of the property? Who owns the property? The Real Estate Investment Trust. And it's their job to maintain the property, make sure the smaller storefronts are rented out. Exactly. Malls, strip malls, you know, shopping centers, big apartment complexes, warehouses, office buildings, hotels. These are owned by real estate investment trusts. And so you don't have to deal with the landlord status. Nice. Then there are smaller operations, sometimes called real estate syndicates and limited partnerships. These got hurt fairly strongly by the 1986 tax reform bill because it separated passive versus active income. And it shouldn't be something that keeps you from investing. But you just have to be on your guard because these things often are easy to get into, but hard to sell your share from. You can invest in tax credits. These are typically low-income housing, where these are people who are looking for tax write-offs, tax deductions. But the idea is eventually it's going to start making money, and then eventually those investments turn a profit, and you have to start paying taxes. And then equity sharing is something that's actually a pretty good idea, especially amongst friends or family, because normally you never want to lend money to a family member or a friend. You don't want to borrow money from a family member or a friend. It can really make things tricky. There's another euphemism with your relationship. But here's an example where it can be a cementing of the relationship, because you're both investing in real estate. You put up the down payment for somebody else. They live in the home. They pay the rent, the mortgage. They pay the property taxes. They keep the house up. And you share in the appreciation. Now, get everything in writing. Find a good lawyer to do it well. Do the documentation well. And it can be a very profitable enterprise for you and your family member or friend, and cement your relationship for your life. It could go bad, but not especially during the housing crisis of 2008 and 2009, but no, in normal times, and these are becoming more and more normal times, it should be a good investment. Keep your eyes wide open, and there are no guarantees. And then this last one on slide 3 is really not an equity position. It's more of a loaning position. Well, the same thing is true of equity sharing, but your name is on the title. But in the first and second trust deeds, first and second mortgages, your name is on the title as a lender. It's not your property. So you're essentially playing the part of the bank or the mortgage company or the credit union. And there's a name for this, folks. It's called hard money. Exactly. These people can't get a loan from the bank or the credit union or the mortgage company, so they are going out there and trying to get individual investors to help them. Yes, exactly. You're going to get a great rate of interest, but your potential for risk, your potential for things not going exactly as planned is much greater. But remember, I mean, your name's on the title, so unless the person, you know, somehow picks up the house and disappears with it, which is not likely to happen, you're not going to lose in that respect, but you could find yourself in a really bad situation, especially when property rates fall. We've all lived through that, so we don't need to discuss that, do we? We'll continue. Slide number 4. How about commercial property? Well, you know, I would suggest a duplex, maybe a small apartment building to start, because the prices for commercial property are just insane. Hotels, office buildings, storefronts. Don't be surprised if you're looking at negative cash flow for several years. The rule of thumb is you're looking for the price to be equal to approximately 7 to 10 times rent. In San Diego, are you nuts? For over 20, 30 years, well, not quite, now 20-some-odd years, prices had become untouchable, simply insane. But the 2008-09 turmoil changed the investing landscape for real estate. Prices plummeted, but they have recovered somewhat, so you got to run the numbers. For many years, they were just untouchable, in my humble opinion. Many people thought otherwise and did whatever they could, and of course were clobbered in 2008-09, and we'll see some examples of that. We'll see a worksheet later on. If you are so inclined, my humble opinion is the South Bay is where the bargains are. That's my humble opinion. You decide. Find a good professional. If you need the name of a good real estate agent, that's a bit of an oxymoron. Maybe good real estate agents, not an honest real estate agent, that's tough to find. If you need the name of a couple of honest real estate agents, please contact me. Because I have a couple that I trust very much, very much, and they are good people. So they're honest. That's the tough part. You got to find. Ooh, let's continue. Slide number 5: investing in fixer uppers. It's kind of tough in San Diego because the competition is so strong that there are people who really do swoop down on these properties. Concentrate on smaller properties first, 2 to 4 units, maybe live in one of them. What a great way to start. Get a duplex, live in one side. You know what's going on because you're living there. Look for down payments, low down payments, and seller financing of rundown properties because banks usually did not want a loan to a distressed property. However, during normal times, banks are normally all too happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books. But those are during normal times. In the 2008, 2009, up to 10, 11, and into 12, there were so many foreclosures and so many rundown properties, and I don't know if you heard of the robo signings, but they were just foreclosing left and right. They couldn't foreclose fast enough. And so you would try to say, hey, here's a rundown property. I want to take it off your hands. I will get back to you in 5 months. What? They just weren't returning the calls. They weren't answering the bids and the solicitations. It's better now. It's much better now, folks. Property values have risen. Fewer properties are underwater. There are fewer foreclosures. This is good, but we're not out of the woods yet, in my humble opinion. And my advice is to, unless you need a property manager, I would avoid a property manager. Because nobody cares about your property as much as you do. But there are always exceptions. There are always good property managers. One of the things I suggest to people who are interested in real estate is get a job as a property manager. Yeah, and then exactly. Then you've seen the industry from the inside out, and you know what you need to do. Exactly. I like it. Slide number 6. Most importantly, if you want to invest in fixer-uppers, are you savvy dealing with repairs? And are you savvy dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important as fixing a toilet. One bad tenant can set you back thousands of dollars, not to mention the aggravation. Make improvements that add perceived value. This is a wonderful book. He actually wrote a few others too, but the investing in fixer-uppers. He says, install a white picket fence. People love a white picket fence. I don't know, but that's what he says. And guys are right. I mean, I'm an imbecile when it comes to fixing things. I cannot. I use the telephone. Rolf! Oscar! Jason, help! Jose! So I have people who I call to help me because I don't know what I'm doing. But this guy is a riot. He had one house that was settling. The foundation was sort of tilting a little bit. So what did he do? He replaced the windows and the doors when he had to, and tilted them all the opposite way to make the house look like it was standing up straight. Nothing new, folks. The Italian engineers did the same thing with the Leaning Tower of Pisa as it was being built. You can see the top. They leaned it the other way. It didn't help much. It leaned quite a lot. Pretty interesting. And so read it. It's a lot of fun. It's a fun read. You can get it at the library or online. Slide number 7. Now, let's take a closer look at these real estate investment trusts. They can be thought of like mutual funds, but instead of investing in stocks and bonds, they're investing in real estate. And they are pass-through investments, just like mutual funds. Remember, mutual funds pass through the interest, the dividends, and the capital gains. Well, the real estate investment trust pass through the rent and any capital gains when they sell a property. So they must, by law, do this, just like a mutual fund must. Shopping centers, office buildings, warehouses, apartment complexes. Management fees typically range between 1 and 2%, kind of like a mutual fund. And over the long term, they've returned 7 to 8%. Right now, yeah, they're because of the hunt for yield from bond investors, and bonds are paying very, very low, so are REITs. REITs were a screaming good deal at the end of the 1990s when some of them were paying 10, 12%. And I'll never forget this woman at the brokerage firm saying, "Oh, I was really talking up this one REIT that we actually did wind up buying, and it turned out to be a great investment. It's private now. It was based in Vista, Pan Pacific Properties." But she said, and this is a woman, you know, a very, you know, long seasoned investor, said, "Who would invest in a REIT now? In 5 years, all the shopping centers will be closed. Everybody will be buying their groceries online." And I just remember saying, "Lady, you can't be serious." I didn't say it. But I think just people just were starry-eyed about the Internet. And, of course, Home Grocer and Webvan, those are all, they disappeared. And now who will deliver your groceries online? Yeah, Vons and Ralph's. And But they didn't disappear. They know they're still around. And it turned out that was a tremendous time to buy REITs. Now they're not paying that much. I wouldn't buy them right now. It doesn't mean they're not good long-term investments. I just think they're too expensive. And in the face-to-face class now, we would run on over to the Yahoo or MarketWatch or Bloomberg and take a look at Realty Income Corporation. They have the symbol O, which I don't think is such a good idea. It can be confused with zero. But anyway, that's the symbol O. And you'll find that these REITs, and then there's Kimco and Simon Properties, they're not paying much in terms of fees from operations, dividends. So I would shy away from them now, personally. But that doesn't mean they're not good long-term investments. They're great because you never have to fix a toilet. It's all done for you. Slide number 8. What are some of the advantages of real estate? Well, real estate investments typically are a hedge against inflation. Real estate tends to go up when inflation goes up. And one of the cool things about real estate, and also one of the dangerous things, is that we use financial leverage. It's the use of borrowed, there's that term again, leverage, I remember that term, the use of borrowed funds for investment purposes, which allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own. And we'll take a look at this in more detail on a worksheet that shows you what happens when things go well and shows you what happens when things don't go well. Do you remember margining? Right, exactly. Same idea, but a whole lot more. Because instead of 50% down, you only have to put 20% down. And during the insanity, now 25, for non-owner-occupied residential, they want 25% down. And not like 5 or 10% down in 2006. For real estate partnerships and REITs, very easy entry. You don't need the down payment. REITs are easily liquidated just like a stock. Not so much with the partnerships and the syndicates. Sometimes it's hard to find somebody to buy your shares. But no management concerns, exactly. And the limited financial liability that limited partners and REITs give you. Plus, one of the cool things about real estate that I always tell people is you can't check the price of your real estate investments every day on the internet as you can with stocks. So you hear people say, oh, I'm in it for the long term, and every 10 minutes they're running over. Oh, it's gone down 25 cents. What should I do? Oh, it's gone up 50 cents. Cool, I'm rich. Well, you can't do that with real estate. Well, actually, you can. There are websites, Zillow, Trulia, Redfin, I think it's Redfin and Realtor.com, that do their best to estimate what the property is worth. But don't trust them, folks. Their numbers are way all over the map. Part of the reason is the realtors, the real estate agents, and brokers want these websites to fail. They don't want them to succeed, so they do their best to sabotage them. But check them out. Check out what the place you're living in is worth, or the places that you would be interested in buying, or what at least Zillow and Trulia seem to think that they're worth. Try it. In the 121 class, we do, when we get to housing. So that's up to you. Go ahead. Slide number 9. What are some of the disadvantages? Well, liquidity. That's the big bugaboo with properties, with real estate, because with a mutual fund, with a stock, you sell it. You call your broker, you go online, boom, it's gone. But it may be hard to sell the property or your share of the property if you're in a partnership. This is not a problem with REITs. Remember, REITs are like stocks. Boom, they're gone the next day. Normally, with real estate, there's a lack of diversification because how many properties can you buy? Right? But REITs, partnerships do offer diversification. The passive tax shelter losses for real estate syndicates, if you're in one that knows it's going to be losing money for the next few years, and that's not unusual, negative cash flow, you cannot, there are limits on how much you can take, you have to carry it forward in terms of the losses against your taxes. And then the management or tenant problems that we talked about, I call it the PETA factor. Remember back in Chapter 4, with mutual funds, the PETA factor is very low. With real estate, the PETA factor is very high. And then lastly, property values can decline. People used to say, oh, no, they can't. No, they can't. I just can never forget this woman in my 121 class saying, oh, my real estate instructor said that property values in San Diego have never declined. This was 2005 or so. I said, oh, wait a minute. They certainly have in the past, and they will do so in the future. Nothing goes up in a straight line. And people just thought you were nuts. That's the problem. That's the problem with bubbles. Everybody seems to tell each other that this can't stop, and of course it can. And it did. Slide number 10. What about your home as an investment? Well, for many households, this is their largest asset. It is normally a good hedge against inflation because traditionally a home produces an after-inflation return of about 2.5% a year. In other words, about 2.5% more than inflation, which is about the same as bonds. You know, sometimes a little better, sometimes a little worse. San Diego has been a notable exception. Yes, it has. Yeah. For some people, San Diego and San Francisco and L.A. and New York and the major metropolitan areas on the left and the right coasts have been very, very good to them. And what are some of the tax advantages? Well, folks, if it is your primary residence, you sell a house, if you're single, for $250,000 more than you bought it and any improvement, including any improvements you've made. You don't pay a dime in capital gains taxes. If you're married, double it. $500,000 in tax-free capital gains. Pretty cool. But it has to be your primary residence. And you can do this every 2 years. And some people are. But it's a home first. In my humble opinion, it's a home first and investment second. Now, you're going to hear from other people, most notably, right, real estate agents, that, no, this is a tremendous investment, and you're going to live here in this neighborhood because this neighborhood's experiencing the greatest price gains now, and then 4 years later, you're going to move to this other neighborhood, and I'll get another commission, and then that neighborhood's going to explode, and then 4 or 5 years later, you'll move to this neighborhood, and It's a home. You got to live there first. But everybody, there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. Slide number 11. This is what you'll hear people say. But my house is the best investment I've ever made. They're usually in their 40s or 50s, and then you try to get them to talk about their other investments, and then they go, oh, yeah, well, it's, of course, it's pretty much the only investment I've ever made, except for that penny stock my brother-in-law, the ex-stockbroker, conned me into buying, but that stuff's worthless now, right? And what about those gold coins I bought way back when the first Gulf War started in 1991? What did I do with those things? I hope they're still... You see, you know, when people say that their house is the best investment they've ever made, that usually means it's the only investment, except for the few times that they tried and failed miserably. So bottom line, in my humble opinion, a house is a home first, an investment second. Oh yeah, Payano, what about San Diego? Prices in San Diego have gone down in the past. I should change this because they have turn the corner, so to speak. They seem to have hit bottom. I did mean to change that. I changed the one, but I didn't change the other. They seem to have hit bottom, but I'm not thoroughly convinced that we're not in for another leg because interest rates are going to come up over the next few years. But if you plan on... Of course, the real estate agents are jumping up and down screaming, this is it! We're going back up! We're going up! We're going... I don't know... But if you plan on staying here, by all means, whatever you can afford, buy it. San Ysidro, National City are two of the best values in the region, my humble opinion. I like them. They're walkable cities. They're National City's really close to downtown San Diego. San Ysidro's close to TJ. Imperial Beach is also a very great beach value. But don't expect what happened in the 2000s to repeat itself for quite some time, folks. That mania is going to come again, but probably not for another 20 years. That's the history of capitalism. Manias, bubbles, followed by crashes and busts, and then a period of where people say, I'll never do that again, until the next time. Exactly. Slide number 13. This was a sign. I just laughed and laughed. This was 1983. Up in North County. A woman had this over her desk. Please, God, let there be another real estate boom, and I promise I won't piss it all away this time. And I sat and talked with her for a while. In the 1980s, starting in the late 70s, property values in San Diego and across California just started to rise and rise and rise. And then there was a downturn in 90, 91, 92... Property values lost about 20-25%, and then they were kind of stable throughout the later 90s, and then starting in 2000 just started to really skyrocket until 2007-08 when I thought it was going to go down about 20%. I really did. My buddy and I were arguing back and forth. He said, no, 50%. Real estate's going to lose at least 50%. I said, Jim, you know, you got to go back to the Great Depression to see that kind of real estate loss. He goes, that's what's going to happen. We're going to have a depression. And he was absolutely right. Now, about the depression part, whether some people might say he was right about that, but he was absolutely right about the housing losing 50%. Some lost a lot more. And it was wrong. But still, we knew that this could not last forever. And you will see it again in your lifetime, probably. Maybe not here in San Diego, maybe someplace else. But we'll see it again. And do you think that this woman pissed it all away in the 2000s? I don't know. I'd like to think that she learned her lesson, but probably not. Slide number 14. Come on, Pagano, admit it. Real estate is the perfect investment. Look at what happened in the past 5 years. This is what people were saying in 2007 and 8, right? 2006. 2007, not 8. By 8, they realized, we is screwed. We is so screwed. Beware the permanent trend. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. Ask those who bought in 1990 and sold in 94. And those who bought in 2006 and are still trying to unload that flipper condo before the bank forecloses, oops, too late, huh? Sorry about that. Well, better luck next time. But if you plan to hold on for the long term, you should do well. By the way, dear students, I hope I've got this across to you. I hope I have. I think I did my best to get you to understand that there is no perfect investment. Every investment has advantages. Every investment has disadvantages. Every investment has rewards and risks. Folks were saying the same thing about stocks. You know, this is it, folks. Productivity gains. Forever blue skies. It's a new millennium. It's a new era. The internet is going to change everything. Well, they're right. It did. I'm still waiting for that internet fad to blow over. And maybe someday it will when we all wake up and the darn thing isn't working anymore. But still, things go in cycles and you have to have a long-term perspective. Okay, slide number 15. But what about leverage? Ha ha ha. What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, we've already discussed leverage, haven't we? But isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Well, yes, yes. But there are pitfalls. Just as with margining stocks, which we learned in Chapter 2, leveraging real estate magnifies your gains and magnifies your losses. So you have to keep your eyes wide open. You're taking on a big risk when you do this, but the potential for reward is great. And right now in the face-to-face class, we would go through the worksheet. It's already on the website, so check it out. There's a commentary and an answer key. And what it'll show you is that by having just 10% down and property values going up, you can make a lot of money very quickly. But the same thing happens in reverse when property values go down. You can lose a lot of money. You can lose everything. And this is what people would ask me during 2008 and 2009. They say, "Well, aren't you not? You know, what are you doing? Aren't you not happy? I mean, stocks have gone down 50%." I said, "Well, I'm not happy about it. Yeah, I'm not happy about it. But I feel really badly. I feel really sorry for the real estate investors who have lost everything." And then some. They've lost not only their investment, but they've lost borrowed money. They still owe the bank $200,000 more than what the property is worth. And it's not over yet, folks. There are people whose houses are still underwater. Now, it's a whole lot better than it was 2010, 2011, and 12, but we're still not out of the woods yet. Do I think we're going to plunge back down into despair and despondency? No. But doesn't mean I'm right. Exactly. And I will tell you that, I've been investing in stocks for decades, but I had so far resisted real estate, almost got involved in one, other than our home, my wife and my home. Quite some time ago, and really should have. It would have turned out pretty well, but I didn't, so what are you going to do? Could have, would have, should have. But then when this debacle happened in 2009, and I just looked around at the prices and said to my wife, I said, you know, maybe we should look at some rental property. And this is, you know, years ago, she said, why are we investing in stocks? Stocks are just paper. Why don't we invest in something like real estate? And I would explain that real estate's too darn expensive. Plus, we can't even keep our own home standing. Can you imagine trying to keep our home plus a rental property standing? That's enough of a problem. Well, when I went to her and said, hey, Anita, because that's her name, Anita, let's take a look at some rental property. She just banked me over the head. You just got me finally feeling comfortable with all these stocks. But look at the prices. And sure enough, we were able to, oh boy, was it a pain. But we were able to buy a property, and it's worked out right. It's worked out very well for us, folks. So there I can claim to be a true contrarian, waiting for prices to plummet and then rushing in. With stocks, I'm just a buy and hold every month. money goes into the Roth IRAs for my wife and I. Money goes into the 403B. Thank you very much. And it's all stock mutual funds. But with real estate, we waited until the time was ripe, and then we pounced, and it was not easy. We grabbed a hold of a few cactuses, I'll tell you, but finally got the prize, the pear, the pawpaw, whatever it's called, the tuna they call it in Spain, right, for the nopales, the fruit of the nopales cactus. We finally got the fruit of the nopales cactus. Slide number 16. That was kind of silly, huh? Slide number 16. Real estate and capital gains. Wait a minute. Did you say there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Slow down. Only your primary residence. So currently, as the law stands now, as long as the real estate is your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years, you pay no capital gains taxes on the first $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. So people are doing it. People are buying a fixer-upper around the country, and they are living in it for 2 years, fixing it up, selling it, and then doing it again. Of course, they usually have their day job, but these are the kind of people who are good fixing plumbing and electrical and flooring and windows and all that stuff. So, hey, buy your home for $200,000, sell it for $700,000, and if you're married, you pay no capital gains taxes. That's pretty cool. You have to be careful. It must be your primary residence. You must live in it for two out of the last five years, and there are a list of criteria that the IRS uses to see if it's actually your primary residence, because there was a well-celebrated case of a couple that had a house in Wisconsin, a house in Arizona, and a house in Florida, and they traveled around quite a bit. And when they sold one of their houses, they said, this is our primary residence. And the IRS said, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. You have no primary residence because you basically live in all three. And the couple took the IRS to court and lost. So be careful. By the way, if you have a capital loss on your primary residence, that's not tax deductible. It's a home first and investment second, in the IRS's opinion, not only my opinion. Slide number 17. Speaking of infomercials, have you seen the ads? Start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just buy our guaranteed surefire real estate investment kit for $395, or better yet, take our 2-day course for only $2,995. You will be on your way toward riches behind your wildest dreams. And if that doesn't work, folks, come back and we'll burn your credit card for $9,995 with a 5-day surefire cannot lose 5-day seminar for only those who are dedicated to becoming rich in months. Folks, don't worry about burning your credit card, because you're going to pay that credit card off and all the other credit cards that you use to buy these surefire real estate quick risk schemes in months, in the first sale that you make. And when that doesn't work, we'll set you up on the 2-week $25,000 cruise, where you and exclusively other people who are just as stupid as you, I mean, just as gullible, just as dedicated to making tremendous sums of money, will be on. Yeah, and think I could make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics? Yeah, I think I could too. Slide number 18. My advice, bottom line, buy a house, make it your home. That's the first step in real estate, okay? After you have digested that purchase, go look for some rental property, but learn as much as you can from folks who are already doing it. Maybe even work for a property manager for a spell to get the feel for what you will need to be able to do. What do you think, huh? Real estate is tricky, but it can be very, very profitable. See ya!